I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. I just wanted to let you know that this episode of Vermont Edition has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We've recently been reaching out to you, our listeners, on social media, asking you what kinds of conversations you'd like to be having with your neighbors that presumably you aren't having, either because it's difficult to gather together or maybe the conversations themselves are a little bit tricky. We thought maybe we could help convene some of those conversations here on Vermont Edition. One of the suggestions we got in response to our query came from Neil McIntyre, who lives in Londonderry. Originally from Connecticut, he's an educator who says he's moved between living in Vermont and New Hampshire for the past 24 years, the last six of which have been here in Vermont. And he told us, I'd like to talk to fellow Vermonters about the apparent divide that exists between transplants, like me, and native-born Vermonters. Now, McIntyre says his job involves having a lot of conversations with many people in the community, especially with kids, and that includes many Vermont transplants as well as many native-born Vermonters.
When conversations become difficult, a lot of times I've found that there are some people who will immediately fall back to, you know, basically attributing the difference to where you're from, and so they'll throw out, oh, you're a Flatlander. We're all here, and we all are here for a reason. There are not a lot of people that move to Vermont by accident. But we're all transplants. This country is a country made of transplants. So why is it that in a country made of transplants, in a state that is populated by so many transplants, why is it that native Vermonters sometimes, not always, but sometimes can feel wary of or untrusting of those transplants? And why is there an assumption that I can't grow into those ideals that Vermonters all share?
McIntyre also gave us an example of the kinds of interactions he has experienced.
On a Facebook forum here in our town, you know, the conversations can talk about anything. You know, people putting speed limit signs at the end of their driveway just to slow people down, and then a debate rages on, and there's some name calling that goes on, and then ultimately somebody who I know said, you know, go back to where you came from, and it's just, I don't know, that hurt me. Because I knew that person. And I even said to that person, like, I'm not from here. Do you want me to go away too?
That's Neil McIntyre of Londonderry. So now it's time for you to weigh in. What makes a Vermonter and who gets to claim to be one? How do we include some and exclude others based on whatever arbitrary definition exists in our minds? And is the definition today different or changing from the one of the past? And here in the studio with me to help guide this conversation is Stephen Perkins, Executive Director of the Vermont Historical Society in Montpelier. Hi, Steve. Nice to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here.
And Cheryl Morse, a rural geographer and assistant professor at the University of Vermont. She studies the relationship between people and place, and she was one of the researchers behind the Vermont Roots Migration Project. Professor Morse, nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Jane.
Steve Perkins, is there a definition, some standard definition, maybe we can even reach back into history of who a Vermonter is?
I don't really think there is a standard definition. I mean, what we see throughout the historical record and, you know, as people talking about nativity, were you born here? How many generations was your family here? Now, of course, that is discounting, you know, thousands of years of Native Americans who've lived in this area. But if you're looking at that kind of Eurocentric history, it's nativity.
But just nativity? Because, I mean, sometimes you hear the stories about you have to have three in the ground, you know, three generations in the ground before you yourself, born in Vermont, get to claim a Vermont identity or even more. You know, it depends on who you're talking to.
You know, I think a lot of those great stories and that kind of those litmus tests came out in, you know, it really in the 1950s and the 1960s, you had comedians like Francis Colburn, who was doing his, you know, I Am a Vermonter shtick, and he had these great albums. And they were kind of like the Jeff Foxworthy comedy that we think of today.
You know you're a Vermonter if.
You know you're a Vermonter if. And you saw that start to rise, and that was like a late 20th century.
So it was almost a joke originally. It wasn't a real definition, this, you know, three in the ground or, you know, Melody Baudette, one of our producers, has said something about her family. She's a long-term Vermonter, but, you know, there are jokes about buns in the oven, cats in the oven, and, you know, you can't call yourself. So that was just a joke, that definition that we now use as like what people say about being a Vermonter is you have to go back a certain number of generations.
Well, I think going back a certain number of generations is true. You know, you're a Vermonter if you're born here, and you're more of a Vermonter if you've got three generations. You're more of a Vermonter after that if you've got eight generations or if you've got nine generations. I think that was a way that folks defined themselves. But you know, the fun anecdotes and way of speaking about it started to come out of that, you know, kind of mid to late 20th century.
You mentioned Native Americans and Sunshine posts. Let's be real. If we're measuring who is a real Vermonter by how many generations have been here, the only real Vermonters are Abenaki, who have been here since time immemorial. The rest of us are settlers. So, you know, there is that perspective too, this idea of who gets to be a real Vermonter. And in many cases, and Steve, we can talk about this later, you know, the idea of real Vermonters excluded the Abenaki. And so, you know, this whole thing is so complicated. Cheryl Morse, what about today? I mean, you look at people, you talk to people who say, I am or I am not a Vermonter. How do they define it?
I'd agree with Steve that it's highly variable. It changes over time. And I think that in a lot of cases, it's a way to actually affirm a rural identity. And I think one of the broader narratives that supports this Vermonter, non-Vermonter is really a narrative about rural identity versus a non-rural identity. It's a way to be proud of being small and rural, which often in our society is actually not something that we're supposed to be proud of. So I think there's sort of deeper stereotypes and narratives here that undergird when we use Vermonter as an insider, you know, outsider sort of dividing line.
So even within Vermont, you know, there's that line that Burlington is such a nice place because it's so close to Vermont. So any Burlingtonians, Chittenden County people, they don't get to claim real Vermont status anymore.
This is highly sensitive territory, Jane.
We're diving right in.
Yeah. As somebody who grew up outside of Chittenden County, I would say there's definitely you hear that all the time. You hear that all the time, not just in Burlington, but at the University of Vermont, which is, of course, housed in Burlington, as a way to define those who are truly rural from those who are more urban-based. And again, it's a rural-urban thing in my mind, more so than sort of authenticity and heritage and how many generations you've been here.
Let's go to Matt, who's calling in from Ascutney. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
It's all about where you're raised as a child. That's the most impressionable time of your life. So if you're raised in Vermont, you would understand the traditions and values of Vermonters. A lot of people who aren't raised in Vermont say, yeah, we get it, but they don't. I mean, it's waking up in January with a, you know, 20 below, going out to get the paper or something. It's all those little things that make you a Vermonter that I don't think some of your listeners really understand.
Matt, may I infer from your accent that you grew up in Vermont, that you are a Vermonter?
Yes, I am.
So do you feel this divide? Do you see people who you see as coming in and claiming that Vermont identity and that makes you feel a little prickly?
Nah, it doesn't really make me feel prickly, but you can always tell the ones that are faking it, you know? It's like you grew up somewhere. That's where your identity really is. Don't be afraid to say that I'm from Michigan or from Massachusetts. We can tell. We can tell your accents and your mannerisms aren't our traditions. It's nothing to be ashamed of, but you're not going to come up here and live for 20 years and think, oh, I'm a Vermonter now. It's something that you started with when you were a kid and you grew up through it. Without that experience, I don't know how you're going to claim to be a Vermonter.
Well, that's interesting, Matt. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective, and thank you for that. Let's get a different one here from Ricky in Randolph. Hi, Ricky. What are you thinking?
Hi. My wife and I live in Williamstown currently. We moved up in 2001 to West Charleston on top of a farm just run by most wonderful people. Everybody was extremely welcoming. And then we would see the terms Take Back Vermont and Flatlanders and so on and so forth. We've lived in Craftsbury, Westmore, Danville. We've moved around quite a bit, Reigate. For the most part, the Vermonters are lovely people. We don't get offended or you know, feel uncomfortable when that term is used. But I came up here in 1968 as a sophomore in high school, didn't realize I was going to be staying on a commune. But even then, that was an experience in the middle of the winter that made me just love Vermont. And I'm a retired police officer, and I just think it's funny how it's us and them, where in Vermont is just such a beautiful place. Just love it here.
But Ricky, you know, it was interesting to me when you were saying, you know, the Vermonters are usually nice to us or something like that. Makes it, you know, even in your own head, you're not referring to yourself as a we when you talk about Vermonters.
Well, I'm African American. My wife is Caucasian. The fact that people look at Vermont as a tree hugger state strikes me kind of funny, too, because Vermont is just like Connecticut, is just like every other place. It's a mix of wonderful people. And if you want to identify with the Vermont traditions, that's fine. But we are who we are, and we have great neighbors and any place we've lived. And I just wish that everybody could see that we are one.
Hmm. Ricky, I really appreciate you sharing your perspective, but boy, you are going to unleash a flood when you just said Vermont is just like Connecticut. I can see the emails pouring in now. One more in here from Keith in Burlington. Hi, Keith. Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Keith. I live in Burlington, and I grew up on a farm in Shelburne, and I've got relatives way back to the 1700s that lived in Vermont. And I've always felt that Vermonters were open and tolerant and accepting. And I've always felt that way. I've worked with a lot of people that weren't necessarily born here. There are two situations that really came to my situation where I realized I did have a bias. And I was at the Vermont Historical Society when they had that exhibit about the new people who come in, the hippies, whatever it was, the new people came to Vermont in the early 70s.
The Back to the Land movement?
Yeah, the Back to the Land thing. And I was down there looking at it, and some young men about my age, or some men about my age, asked me to take their picture. And I said, because they were saying, this is when we came, and they went back to the land, et cetera. And I just mentioned, did you come here after going to Vietnam, or did you go to Vietnam? And they said no. And I realized that these guys came up with a lot of background and money and sort of went back to the land. And here I was as a guy on not a lot of money, pretty poor, living on a farm. And I was, you know, called up for the Vietnam War, and I was with a lot of other people in that war, minorities, who were poor, and whites who were poor, and that just sort of brought up all that classism thing about people wanting to come back to love Vermont, and they hadn't, you know, I just felt like I had to leave Vermont during that period. And the second thing that kind of gets to me at times is, you can probably hear the passion in my voice, is I live around the University of Vermont, and the university is bringing in around 70% of people, students from out of state who are really nice, but they're displacing a lot of, taking places that a lot of people who want to move to Vermont or who want to live in Vermont, they can't afford to buy or rent. And sometimes the parents will say, how can you live on a street with all these students? And we don't have a choice. The other thing is they say, oh, Vermonters are granola eating people or crunchy granolas. And, you know, we just smile. But it sometimes the prejudice against people who come in and talk about where they came from is more of an elitist, sort of an anti-elitist or classist feeling than rather a respect for you came here because you like what we're doing here. And
Keith, I want to pick up on what you're saying, because you're swirling around a lot of interesting things in this idea of class and this idea of class being part of the issue between people who move to Vermont from somewhere else and people who are born here is not one that should just be discounted, because we know from demographics that many native-born Vermonters, if you just look at the populations as a whole, native-born Vermonters typically have a lower income level than people who have moved here and from other places, a lower education level. And, you know, these days, about half the people who live in Vermont are from somewhere else originally, were born somewhere else, and about half are from here. So there is a class divide that we can see just in demographics. And Keith, you're talking about the feeling of that, how that actually comes out in the way that, you have interactions with people. Professor Morse, I'd love for you to pick up on that because I know that's something that you've learned about and talked about.
Yeah, Keith does bring up some really important points about class, and one of the ways that I can describe that is in terms of educational attainment. So in some of the research I've done with people who've grown up in Vermont, I've learned that life is harder here. It's harder to make a living if you have lower educational attainment. And in our country, we often link class with educational attainment, even though it's not perfect. And so Keith's point that it is harder to make a living here if you don't have a high degree of education is right on point. And what do we do when we feel threatened or we feel less than others? We find things that we can feel proud about. And one of those things may be our heritage or our attachment to place. And it doesn't feel good to sometimes feel less than if one doesn't have the ability to kind of to get those jobs, those professional jobs in Chittenden County or elsewhere. And it doesn't feel great to not be able to afford sometimes to live in the community where you grew up. And that's certainly something that I saw happen in my own community where I grew up. I think maybe there's one person from my class who can afford to live in the town where I grew up.
And what town did you grow up? Were you
in Woodstock? Woodstock, yeah. So I think this point, there are lots of different people from all kinds of socioeconomic backgrounds who use Vermonter as a point of pride or a way to exclude others. But the broader underlying difficulties associated with being able to afford to live here based on socioeconomic background is it's really important. It's really worth considering further.
Yeah, and that whole idea, even just about farming, you know, farm to plate, farm to table, but who gets to participate and the cachet of being a farmer versus the hard scrabble life of being a farmer often depends on, you know, how much money you start with. Boy, it's interesting stuff, and we're going to continue talking about it. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're looking at the question of how we define and shape and exclude when it comes to the Vermonter identity. Who gets to claim their Vermonters? How do you think of yourself? We're talking with Stephen Perkins from the Vermont Historical Society and UVM researcher and Professor Cheryl Morse. And you, this conversation came out of a question we posed to you about what you'd like to be talking about with your neighbors. And Neil McIntyre of Londonderry answered, "I'd like to talk to fellow Vermonters about the apparent divide that exists between transplants like me and native-born Vermonters." So we're having that conversation. Brian says his only issue with the transplants is when they visit, fall in love with Vermont because it's a slower pace, more rural, then they try to turn it into where they came from. Melinda says, "I have lived in Vermont for 6 years. I'm married to a man whose family has been in Vermont for generations. In my experience, I've found that if you come here with an attitude of understanding and acceptance towards the local cultures, most people never even question your origin story. In doing this, it's relatively easy to assimilate into a community of very friendly, down-to-earth people. Those who are labeled flatlanders seem to be those who arrive with a selfish and self-serving attitude. They seek to gain without giving anything in return. Any set of people is well within its rights to feel begrudgingly towards someone who seeks to take advantage or forces change on their history, culture, and way of life." Justine says, "It's not about time spent in the state. It's how you feel about the state. It's not how others judge you, but how you feel. You can live here for 100 years and hate it, or spend 6 months and love it." And Dan has a lighthearted litmus test for who gets to say they're a Vermonter. He says, "Born and raised here?" You say, "Garage." "Days of the week end in D, not day, like Saturday." You say, "So I says." You know how to pronounce shallot. You ask, "What the hell is soft serve?" Obviously, in Vermont, it's a creamy. Let's go to Bill calling in from Morristown. Hi, Bill.
You have to add to the list pie for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
I have X generations. I won't even brag about it. I have X generations going back. Lots of granite and marble stones spread all over Cambridge and Jeffersonville with family names on them. But what I've tried to do, as I've grown more mature, I hope, is instead of hammering people over the head with my nativism, which I'm proud of, and lots of Revolutionary War and Civil War ancestry, is to teach the history of Vermont to people who obviously are somewhat new, even people who've been here 10 or 15 years. And some of my best mentors have been people who've come from, quote, down country, learned some trades from them and so on. So I've tried to instill in the newcomer instead of the flatlander a sense of the history of Vermont, and I believe that can be summed up in one phrase, and that is the love of liberty. And so Vermont has, you know, been an independent republic and lots of other things, brags about its involvement in the Civil War per capita and so on. And I like to brag about that and tell people why Vermont is the way it is, but not disparage their choice to come here. My family came, as did many percentages of some of northern Vermont's best known families, from Litchfield area of Connecticut. So we have to swallow that.
Bill, you know, it's interesting. You talk about the history, and let's pick up on that. Let's talk about the history. We got a note from John as well, who says, this is not a new conversation. Paul Searles, in his book, Two Vermonts, Geography and Identity, identifies it as a divide in Vermont between uphill or rural Vermont versus downhill or urban cosmopolitan Vermont. Right now, especially with elimination of local school boards, it seems like the downhillers predominate. The geography of our state and the resilience of those with an uphill mentality and lifestyle are not to be ruled out. So, Steve Perkins, let's talk a little bit about the history. I mean, this seems like a conversation that has been happening, as John points out, for a long time, this idea of who gets to claim an identity here.
It has been going on, and the Historical Society, of which I direct, has been around since 1838 and has published a journal since that time, and it has shown up within the pages of that journal up until last year, and we continually look at that. And our museum in Montpelier, the Vermont History Museum, the central question of that museum is, what does it mean to be a Vermonter? And that's what we ask people as they go through. So we present all of this history, but that's one person's viewpoint. And we say, go in there, ask questions, who's there, who's not there, and then how do you fit into that story? And we present it using the theme of Vermont's motto of freedom and unity to move your way through that. How do we use our land? How do we govern ourselves? And then what does it mean to be a Vermonter? I guess I don't really have a great answer, but it's been going on for a long time, and the state in some ways has tried to define what it's meant to be a Vermonter in the past, and that's proven interesting as well.
Well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling in from Essex. Hi, Bruce. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Well, hi. This is a complicated issue regarding the history. As a member of the State Board of Libraries, I'm hip deep on it in a way. And I'd say you'd have a tiger by the tail, but in deference to Cheryl and her employer, the University of Vermont, I'll say you got a catamount by a tail. But what we're dealing with, you know, is superficially Dorothy Canfield Fisher and her participation, perhaps, in the eugenics movement, and that was in part a debate about who was a Vermonter, what kind of Vermonter we wanted to have, and it was in some ways a class. John's comment about downhill Vermonters trying to remake Vermont in its own image after we saw tremendous immigration out of Vermont by a lot of the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant original settlers. So it can be a fun thing to talk about, but I agree with Stephen. We have to really look closely at our history and see that debate's going on for a long time, and it has some dark tones as well.
Yeah, Bruce, I'm glad you brought that up, and you mentioned Dorothy Canfield Fisher. You mentioned eugenics, and Steve, could you take that and run with it a little bit, because this is one of the darker sides of Vermont identity and the eugenics movement, and much of it really centered at UVM, and this idea of, you know, purity and who gets to be a Vermonter, and so much of that is tied in with race and class. And, you know, we talked earlier about the Abenaki being the first Vermonters, but in the eugenics movement, not deemed, you know, quality enough to be a Vermonter. So this has a very dark side, and I would maintain often still does.
It certainly does. And so this goes back early 20th century. The idea of eugenics, you know, building that better Vermonter, it's not unique to Vermont, but certainly happened here. Dr. Henry Perkins, who was a zoology professor at UVM.
Related to you or not related?
Not related. I'll put that one out there. Who decided to look at, you know, what does this mean? What is a Vermonter? How do we make society better? And it was, at the time, a progressive ideal. So there were committees and formed around the state. The state sponsored it. It was run out of UVM. And they really tried to wrap their minds around what is that archetypical Vermonter? What is Vermont culture? What is Vermont art? What is Vermont literature? That's where Dorothy Canfield Fisher comes in. And then who doesn't fit into that? Now, Vermont was a fairly homogeneous place anyway, so you have a few outliers, and often it was the Abnaki and the French Canadian deemed as undesirable. The Abnaki, you know, with race, French Canadian is that socioeconomic piece. But you know, there was sterilization that happened in Vermont in the early 1930s. So this is a big issue for us, and I think to think about and talk about when you say, I'm a Vermonter, you're not a Vermonter, how are we impacting how people feel and their identity?
Cheryl Morse, in your Vermont Roots Migration Survey, you heard from more than 3,500 people who went to high school in Vermont, and so then you categorized them as, you know, people who stayed in Vermont or people who have left Vermont or people who left and have returned to Vermont. Are you hearing that question of race and identity and not so much class, because we've talked a little bit about that, but specifically race and visible identity as one of the pieces of how people feel about this identity as Vermonter?
Yes, we did. Amongst those who have left, who chose to leave Vermont and live elsewhere, we found several really interesting, sort of interconnected and unexpected things. One that's not unexpected, I think, if you grew up here, is that a huge percentage of our respondents, maybe 80% of the leavers, said that they were homesick for Vermont. And what they missed was our landscape and the small scale of community and what they defined as Vermont culture. But when we asked them what it is, what were some of the reasons that the factors that drew them away from the state, there was the search for work and jobs and things like that. But a desire for more diverse cultural opportunities was a really big factor for about 20% of the people who left. So it's very interesting that people can still feel, and the other thing we learned is that they also still identify as Vermonters, even if they've left decades ago. They still in their heart feel that they're a true Vermonter, although they may never aspire to live here again. So they claim that identity, but they say they wanted something more in terms of cultural diversity. We also learned from global returnees. So those are returnees who lived abroad for a period of time and then decided to move back to Vermont, that they have a huge commitment to diversity, cultural and racial and ethnic diversity. And they're seeking to sort of engender that back in our state and make it a more welcoming place for people from all over to visit and to move to.
You know, I have friends here who are African American, and I certainly won't speak for them on their experiences, except to say that I know for some of them, there is an exhaustion of having to constantly say, no, I am a Vermonter, because there's a visual cue that people seem to make an assumption that because of their race, they are not Vermonters. And that is exhausting to constantly feel like you have to defend your own identity in the face of people who are saying you are something you're not, or who are assuming you're something you're not because of how you look. And I think that is part of the conversation, as we have this idea of who's a Vermonter, who gets to decide, and how are we deciding? And not just on how many generations you go back, but what you look like, how you talk, how you behave, that these are all cues that people use to define us, even when we define ourselves in a different way. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking with UVM professor Cheryl Morse, who studies the relationship between people and place, and Vermont Historical Society director Stephen Perkins, and we're having a robust back and forth with many of you about what it means to be a Vermonter and who gets to claim that mantle. We got a note from Echo for Sierra, who says, I've been here 20 years, and my neighbor, a fifth-generation Vermonter, called me a Vermonter. I nearly fell over. It's the idea of freedom and unity, respecting individualism as a whole. It's not as paradoxical as it may seem when you're part of it. Cal says being a Vermonter means stopping to help when someone's car is broken down, milking your neighbor's cows when he's broken his ankle, checking on older residents after a big storm. In essence, being neighborly to all. And user Riotous Pancakes had one of the top comments when we asked this question on Reddit, writing, "I was born in Vermont, as were generations of my ancestors back to the 1750s. I currently live outside of Vermont, but still consider myself a Vermonter and plan to move back eventually. I think to truly be a Vermonter, you have to know that Vermont is your home. The feeling the Green Mountains give you can't be replicated by any other mountain ranges. To me, Vermont has always been the place where, when the going gets tough, you just keep going. It's a no-nonsense place where the nonsense is very different. It's welcoming but elusive. It clings to its history and heritage while trying to pave new ways forward and evolve." And another Redditor, Costco Law School, identifies as a Flatlander and says, "I get frustrated by the sense of you don't belong here because your great-great-great-grandfather didn't build the farmhouse you are currently living in. The sense of you'll always be an outsider is a bit demoralizing after finding a place I want to settle. All that said, I get why natives are protective of their state. They don't want Vermont turning into another East Coast state where people are jerks, stressed out, always in a rush. I get that, and I even support it. So I do relate to that mindset, even if I'm not one of them." How about you? Do you identify as a Flatlander? Do you wish you were a Vermonter but feel like you can't call yourself one? Is that something that you self-impose on yourself, or is that something that you feel you are getting back from other people, and so it's something that you just, you know, it's not worth trying to call yourself a Vermonter if you're going to be getting side eye? James is calling from Jericho. Hi, James. What's your experience?
Hey, thanks for having me. I just want to say please support on this Giving Tuesday, and I just want to quickly go in with my two cents and say that, yeah, I live in Jericho, Vermont, or should I say my family lives there, and I'm from California. I've come to love Vermont, and I plan to live here and raise kids out here. I'm a black man in Vermont, but I guess a black man in a white world, depending what part of the world, you may feel that a little bit more or less. Vermont, for me, my experience has been great. I'm there for the corn roast. I'm parking at Curtis Lumber before I go see the fireworks. I'm trying to go and be at the tree lighting ceremony we're going to do this week in Jericho. To me, it's my personal little Stars Hollow. A lot of people rubberneck and look at me when I walk down the road and everything, but, you know, it's just curiosity to see diversity. I'm happy and proud to help add to the diversity of this great place. My girlfriend, she was born here. She was adopted. She's black and white. And she has concerns about raising kids out here just due to a lot of people not getting around out in the world and maybe staying too close to home and not getting that diversity from moving around. But I say that environment always is going to trump people. And to me, it's very important to stay with the environment. It's very important to have no billboards. Very important to have no GMOs. This is very important to me.
James, do you call yourself a Vermonter? Do you think of yourself now as a Vermonter?
You know, when I'm in New York or anywhere else and they see my Vermont license plates, they're calling me that, and I just try to go and carry it with honor. I try to, I try to be very open-minded and, the same qualities that I come to really appreciate from my close family out here in Vermont.
James, I love what you're saying, and it's so interesting to hear this perspective from you on you know what it means to be a Vermonter and how you are finding your way in Vermont and really embracing some of the things in the community that you've chosen to live in. Professor Morse, when we talk about all this, the original question we got from Neil in Londonderry was, you know, how do we bridge this apparent divide? And clearly, you know, Neil feels that there's a divide, that he's often feeling that in social media conversations and in this sort of knee-jerk reaction when things get tense to say, well, you're not from here, you wouldn't understand. So how do we get beyond that? You know, regardless of how we decide to define Vermonter, how do we not put ourselves into these opposite corners?
Your caller from Jericho nailed it. He described to us the way that he's getting involved, and he's engaging, and he's doing things, and he's going to those physical spaces where you encounter others. And I think that's the first step in creating bridges. And so how do you do that in a small town? Well, you get involved with the public school. You go to town meeting. You go to the tree lighting ceremony. And more than that, you actually, more than just sort of being a passive participant, you're an active participant. You go and you volunteer and you work alongside others. And there's nothing like working with other people to create a sense of reciprocity and respect. And I think that it is those times when we feel tense about hard issues, then when we start to kind of start to put up the line between us and them. And I think it's harder and harder to do that when you consider the them your friend or your colleague or somebody that you've worked alongside. So I really respect the perspective that the caller from Jericho just gave us.
Steve, what about for you? I mean, I know that the Historical Society is working on this question of identity and who gets to be a Vermonter. And you were saying you let people decide that for themselves now and then reflect that at the museum.
We do. And I think in the past, the Historical Society has somewhat been complicit in defining what a Vermonter is. But now we're asking people to come into the space, move through the exhibit, and then define what it means to them to be a Vermonter. We actually have a photo booth where they can take a picture of themselves holding up a whiteboard saying, I am a Vermonter because, or I love Vermont because. And that then becomes part of the exhibit. So we're defining what it means to be a Vermonter by the people who are walking through the door and participating.
And you're not asking them first whether they have, you know, three generations back before they get to go into that photo booth.
Not at all.
So do you think moving forward, this is going to be the same question that was happening in 1850, 1950, is going to be happening in 2050? This question of identity is still going to be such a preoccupation of Vermonters?
I think a question of identity is a human condition, and we're constantly going to be talking about it, and it's going to define us and helps us create history and culture and conversation, and it's going to keep going on. But it's a good conversation.
It is a good conversation. I appreciate Neil for sparking it. And listeners, if you have a conversation you want to spark, go to vpr.net, click on Vermont Edition. You can add your thoughts there. We always read your emails as well. Steve Perkins is Executive Director of the Vermont Historical Society. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Cheryl Morse is a rural geographer and assistant professor at UVM. And we will put a link to the Vermont Roots Migration Project at vpr.net. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.